and welcome to Spawned, a common sense, generally fun, and hopefully helpful discussion on parenting and parenting culture. Hey, I'm Kristen Chase.
And I'm Liz Gumbiner. We're the founders of CoolMomPicks.com. And today, we are talking about one thing that we all are talking about these days, voting, with a very special guest, Amber McReynolds, who's been called, I love this, Kristen, the leading lady of vote by mail. She's the founder and CEO of National Vote at Home Institute, which you may know as voteathome.org. And we're excited for her to answer a lot of the questions that many of us have about voting this very important election year and maybe help us clear up some of the misinformation that's out there. Right, Kristen?
Yes. And as always, we will close out our show with our cool picks of the week, and we will be back with our special guest right after this.
This episode of Spawned is brought to you by Perfect Clean, the cleaning goods trusted by leading hotels and hospitals for the past decade. Only now it's available to all of us. Perfect Clean makes mops, wipers, and cleaning kits for the bathroom, for the kitchen, for dusting, basically your whole household. And you don't have to steal them from the hotel. They save you money because they help you cut back on disposable paper products. Plus, you don't need to use any harmful chemicals or solutions to clean effectively. Just add water. The CDC recommends disinfecting frequently touched items in the home to reduce the spread of COVID-19. Use the Perfect Clean hospital-grade products and make it easy. To keep your home safe and clean, visit perfectclean.com. That's perfectclean.com. And use code COOL for 25% off your order. Again, that's perfectclean.com with code COOL for 25% off your order.
All right, so let's tell you a little bit more about today's guest, Amber McReynolds. She's one of the country's leading election experts, a democracy entrepreneur, and co-author of the book, When Women Vote. Amber is the former director of elections for Denver, Colorado, and now the CEO for the National Vote at Home Institute and Coalition, or voteathome.org.
And if you don't know the organization, they are amazing. They're dedicated to making sure every American, that means all of you, most likely, can vote in secure, safe, accessible, and equitable elections by expanding vote-at-home systems in all 50 states and hopefully territories. They partner with organizations including the ACLU, League of Women Voters, the Bipartisan Policy Center, Common Cause, Rock the Vote. So basically, they're a big deal and they are effective.
Amber also serves on the National Election Task Force on Election Crises as an advisory board member for multiple organizations, including the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, that small little school, MIT. Their election and data science lab. And in 2018, Governing Magazine named her a top public official of the year for her work. And with all this, she's also a mom of two. Man, she is so busy and we're so grateful that she could join us today. Welcome, Amber.
Welcome.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
We're so happy to have you. We connected with you through our friend Janine from Feed Our Democracy, who is amazing. And any friend of her, let's just say, is going to be a friend of democracy.
Yes.
So every year around this time, especially during presidential years or, you know, midterms, we talk to our readers and our listeners about basics like how to be sure you're registered at a new address, you know, kind of the basics about voting. But this year, people are talking about how to vote with a lot more urgency because of COVID, among other things. And so we'd really like to cover issues ranging from what's happening with the post office to disenfranchisement to confusion about absentee ballots and voting by mail. Let's jump right in and cut to the chase. Amber, is it safe to vote by mail?
Absolutely. And it's been a tried and true and secure and safe process dating back to the Civil War. That's when it started to be in use by military voters. It's been extensively used by military voters. And frankly, there's been vote by mail options in every single state for decades. So this is not a new phenomenon. And there are systems in place to make it safe and secure for everyone.
I actually just saw, I think it was Senator Ron Wyden saying on a show the other day that he was the first vote by mail senator, that he was elected through the vote by mail process in Oregon.
Yeah, I think he was the first one. And then, interestingly enough, and the bipartisan nature of things always come up with regards to this, or at least it has this year. And in our state, the first senator elected was Senator Cory Gardner on the Republican side. So it definitely makes voting easier for all.
Definitely. I remember the first time I went into a voting booth and I thought there must be an easier way. But that's a whole other discussion. But we are talking about mail. That's the big thing. And I'm just wondering, is there a history of massive election fraud via mail-in voting?
We've heard a few people in the media talking about massive election fraud. Is that a thing?
No, actually, voter fraud is exceedingly rare. And that voter fraud, I kind of always distinguish between voter fraud and election fraud. But voter fraud, which would be something that an individual voter would do, is exceedingly rare. Like, we rarely ever see anything like that. And then election fraud is also exceedingly rare. And that's really more on the side of a bad actor or somebody else trying to interfere or do something to impact individual voters. That is kind of like what we saw in North Carolina. And there was a case recently in New Jersey. So there's always a distinction between voter fraud, what the voters actually do or don't do, and then election fraud that's usually done to voters. And both are exceedingly rare.
So to get into voter fraud, and I appreciate you making the distinction, I think that's really important. I know on your site, it said that in 2016, 33 million Americans cast ballots that were mailed to them. And that was about a quarter of all ballots in that election. Now, out of 33 million mail-in ballots, were there millions that were fraudulent? Like, what's the number, more or less?
Absolutely not. So the most recent data we have, a lot of folks have actually said lately that you're more likely to get struck by lightning than see something like this happen. The real facts and real numbers are exceedingly small. And when I say that, I mean like 0.00006%. Like, it's tiny issues. And usually it's not somebody doing something deliberate. It's a misunderstanding of a process, or they moved and they didn't change their residence in another state or something like that, that we can catch. And the reason it's exceedingly rare is that we have systems in place at every point in the process to deter and detect that type of activity. So that's why when you hear that there's all of this fraud, there's actually no evidence that supports that. There's no widespread fraud across the election system. But that kind of misinformation is one of the most significant impacts on the election process, is that kind of disinformation, misinformation, and sort of misleading types of statements about the process that are just not true.
And so I'm curious, actually, if you can elaborate on what some of those systems are, because not everybody is glued to MSNBC all day like me. Yeah. And, I've been hearing that there's rumors and misinformation, as you were saying, about like foreign election fraud and like terrible state actors can send false ballots to people overseas. And then I saw the rebuttal to that, which is that every state has their own voting system, that they have tracking IDs with each ballot that they send to track voters. Like, is that accurate? Are there other things that states do to prevent it? How does it work, basically?
So it's actually extremely complicated. And there's multiple steps in the process that most people don't even know happen with regards to elections. So the first step really is your voter registration information. To get a ballot mailed to you, you must be an active registered voter, meaning your address needs to be up to date. If you've moved and the election office got an undeliverable piece of mail from you or something like that, and you haven't taken action on that, a ballot's not going to get mailed to you. So the accuracy of the voter registration information and making sure that that's up to date and making sure voters check that. And if you haven't checked that lately, you should do that now. But making sure that's all accurate first, right? So that's kind of first step number one. Mm-hmm. The next piece is the production of ballots. Somebody wouldn't be able to just go online and push print and print a bunch of ballots. Ballots are laid out within the voting system that is secured and off network. So those voting systems where the work is done to basically program the election process so that we can tally the ballots, all of those individual ballots that are mailed out are specific to the precinct and ballot style based on the address where you live. And so your ballot has coding around the sides that is specifically produced out of the election system that is not online or not available to be online. They don't post those PDFs. They don't share that because that's considered secure information. So then once that's all set, and every state varies, every jurisdiction varies. You know, there's only one state really that coordinates at the state level the ballots going out. The rest of it is all specific to counties. There's a specific paperweight used. Those ballot images along with the voter file goes to a printing and mailing vendor. vendor, or sometimes it's done within the election office and they determine what your ballot style is. They prepare your envelope. It has intelligent mail barcodes on it. It has a barcode that's your voter ID along with your ballot sequence and election ID. So there's all this very specific data on the outside of the envelope that is produced. And then the ballot that I mentioned that's specific to you based on where you live also then goes into the envelope. And then that's what gets mailed to you. And by the way, all of those pieces, the ballot, the envelopes, the instructions, all those things in the packet change every single election. So someone would need to basically infiltrate not only all those things that I mentioned, but then in addition on the back end, infiltrate the verification of the ballots when they come back in, which includes signature verification. They would also have to get past detection systems like thickness detectors within the equipment. They would also have to figure out how to get the ballots actually counted and scanned. And if they are not specific with the coding, the machines will spit them out and flag them as a problem, right? So I think I've counted between 30 and 40 different steps in the process that basically are constantly checking on the security.
Wow.
I had no idea. That's amazing.
I could wonk out on this all day, by the way, Kristen, as you know. I'm like,
oh, yes,
sitting here
the data
like
nerd,
drooling.
The resident data nerd. I'm sure I can hear you pinging from Philadelphia. So, Amber, can you talk a little bit about why you believe voting from home actually increases election participation and helps create more equity? I mean, I kind of have my ideas, and I'm sure Liz does as well, but I'd love to hear from you just, you know, why this actually helps get more people out and helps make it more equal.
Well, first I would say, you know, going back to my time in Denver, we set out to put voters first. And what I mean by that is in most states right now, the laws on the books, the processes in place are not designed to put voters first. They're bureaucratic, they're inefficient, they don't serve their customers very well, all those things. And so the reason that I know it increases turnout is because we proved it in the state where, you know, I was an election official, and now every state that has advanced or expanded voting by mail options have also increased turnout. So we have a lot of data actually that backs up that claim, and it is true. All of the states that are in the top 10 states repeatedly and consistently have similar policies in place, including expanded vote by mail and modernized voter registration systems and those sorts of things. The other thing that I will say is that election policy must be about who votes, not who wins.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that's wonderfully said. So
and the problem is, and frankly, the truth is, many established politicians would not benefit personally from a reformed voting process. And the crazy thing that's in our country that's actually makes us pretty unique comparatively to the rest of the world is that we have a lot of partisanship and politics infused in the setting of the rules of the game for elections. Yeah. And what I mean by that is we have 50 different state legislative bodies. They get to set the rules of the game, if you will, with regards to elections. And yet they are players in the game because they are trying to get elected. So we kind of continue to see this story written over and over where the politicians that get elected in a certain way don't want to change the system because they believe it'll impact them. And then finally, if we look back at the 2016 election, it was the most watched, highest anticipated election in our history. And it was a record year for voting. So a lot of people don't realize that it actually set the record for turnout. Turnout was only 60% of eligible American voters. So over 100 million people who were eligible in 2016 didn't vote. And when we asked them why, they indicated it was inconvenient, they faced a barrier, they couldn't get off work, they missed the deadline to register to vote, or they waited in line or showed up at their polling place and couldn't wait after a certain period of time. So we know that it's not apathy. We know based on asking these voters that didn't vote, 100 million, which by the way, is almost 40 million more people than who cast a ballot for Trump or Clinton. Both of them got slightly over 60 million votes. 100 million people did not vote.
I want to cry thinking about these numbers. And every time I see the pie chart, I guess the optimistic way to see it, the glass half full, is that it's not about apathy. It's about challenges and perhaps getting to the polls. It's about childcare. It's about gerrymandering. It's about removal of polling places from neighborhoods where they need a lot more of them, where they have high populations. It's about people not getting a national holiday off. Like, I'm sure you could name 600 more of those.
Yeah. You know, we live in an era of same-day shipping, free delivery, Lyft and Uber, take-home cocktails.
Yes. Right? This is such a good point. Yes, thank you.
Just think about consumer behavior. Mm-hmm. People are in record numbers in the height of the pandemic, but even before that, were asking for experiences to be delivered to them at home on their schedules. And the voting process is frankly no different. And that's why when people have access to vote by mail, or, you know, the models where it's opt out, so you just get a ballot automatically when you register to vote, they love it. Of all different party affiliations, they love it because it is very much about consumers and what they choose to do. And it's no different with businesses.
You know, I was just trying to quickly look up while you were speaking the number of people who voted for American Idol. Because I was interested in like trying to compare, like if you could just do it through a remote control on your television, how easy it would be. And I'm thinking that every parent who listens to this podcast who has ever tried to sign somebody up for a class activity knows how much easier it is to do when you send an email or you have a sign up form as opposed to getting people in class to like fill out an actual, you know, like to literally vote, to like put your name down. Like, I will bring the plates for the class party. Like, it's just people want everything to come to them and happen on their time. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's kind of like supply and demand too. I mean, I've been saying this to politicians. It's really not up to the politicians to decide if voters vote this way. It's up to voters. And voters are choosing this method of voting in record numbers. But, you know, and it very much relates to their consumer-driven decision-making, right? So it's no different. And, you know, when we look at those 100 million people or so that didn't vote and see that inconvenience or a barrier was a big part of it, this actually solves for most of those issues. That's really the kind of design and system thinking that we have to be focused on in terms of improving the process for everyone.
Yes. And I would hope, I mean, at least the way I see it is when I hear a politician from any party, from anywhere, who wants to make it more difficult for people to vote, I think, well, why? Why is that? What do they have to lose? Because it just seems so completely patently undemocratic to me. So listen, I want to talk to you about some of the other misinformation around voting, because you'd mentioned there's been misinformation about that. And I know some of it, there's honest misunderstandings because it's complicated, especially as you mentioned, it's different by state and by precinct and locality and municipality. But there's also a lot of misinformation and outright lies right now that are being deliberately spread as a way to disenfranchise voters, to interfere with our elections. And I'm wondering what you think, from your expert position, is the most important fact that people aren't getting right now? Like, is there anything you'd like to correct?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Where to begin?
So first, I would say absentee ballots, voting by mail, mail-in ballots, all vote by mail. Every ballot that is listed in that list is treated exactly the same way when it comes into the election office. So the idea that absentee ballots are somehow different than the ballots that go out in a state like Colorado or California is insane.
So absentee ballots and mail-in ballots, same thing, right?
Same thing. They're not different. When they come in, they are counted and processed and checked into the system in the same exact way. The difference is, so if you have a state that's created an opt-out system like a Colorado or an Oregon or Washington or some of the other states, now there's 10 plus Washington, D.C. that are going to mail ballots out proactively. There's sort of been this premise that, well, it's more secure if you make everyone request the ballot. And these are unsolicited ballots that are going to be mailed out. So my answer to that is when you register to vote, you are requesting your ballot. And that's very simple, but there is no reason to register to vote if you do not intend to get a ballot. Why would you do that? Right. So this idea that these are unsolicited in these states where absentee ballots are going out to active voters is crazy. Now, those states, those 10 that I mentioned, they've actually reduced their costs, reduced their administrative burdens, and reduced bureaucracy and saved voters time by not making everyone sign up to get one. There's other states where it's an opt-in system. So you've got to actually take action, sign up to get a ballot, and then it'll come to you. And that actually costs more money, takes more time, and it's more bureaucratic and administratively inefficient versus the system where a ballot actually goes out automatically. And so there's no such thing as an unsolicited ballot regardless, because when you register to vote, you are affirmatively stating that you would like to vote, because why else would you register to vote?
That's amazing. And you know, it's making me think of taxes. When you take a job, if you have a paycheck job, you get a W-2 in the mail, or you get a 1099 form in the mail. That's like, here it is, pay your taxes. You don't have to go request one. They're making it easy for you to pay your money to the government. Why are they not making it just as easy for you to vote?
I totally agree. And the IRS comparison I love, and I actually use this a lot, because one of the issues with some states that we've seen this year come up is that there's still a group of states, small group, that do not allow the advanced processing of absentee ballots when they come in. So like when you turn it into the election office, there's some states and really important states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, where the election officials are not allowed to touch or process that ballot until election day. So the comparison is, it's like saying to the IRS, you have to get your taxes in by April 15th, which would be election day in this case, but you can't start processing those returns until April 15th, but yet you have to be done with those returns by April 16th.
I'm so glad I came up with a good analogy that you've already thought of for years and years.
Yes, the good old IRS.
It makes perfect sense.
No, it does make sense.
So they make it easy when they want to get something from you, but not so easy when they think it can hurt them. It's food for thought.
Fascinating. Well, Amber, you know, I know this is the case for Liz too, like all over my social media feed right now and for the last few weeks, it's been all about Trump's newly appointed postmaster general, the removing of sorting machines, the removing of mailboxes. You know, it's everywhere. That's all I'm seeing in my feed, along with weird back to school photos of kids in pajamas, you know? So that's basically what I'm seeing right now in my social media feeds. And so I'm wondering, do you think that this is going to have an effect? Is it not? If it is, what kind of effect do you think it's going to have?
Well, so here's what I would say. First off, the post office, and this dates back years now, I ran elections for 13 years, so I'm very familiar. I've been to the general mail facility, which is the largest in the kind of western region besides California. And I spent a lot of time there, like learning about their processes, touring the plant, making sure they were ready to go. And I will say that even 6-7 years ago when I was out there, these are massive facilities. Like postal facilities are massive. They had some of these older sorting machines tarped. And I actually asked them, I was like, oh, what are those? Are you not using those anymore? And they're like, well, we got this new equipment. But it literally costs us so much money to remove that equipment because they had built it into the structure of the building that they basically put it on hold because they couldn't afford, with their budgetary issues, to remove the equipment.
Wow.
I know for a fact that there's definitely equipment that they are likely removing that should be, right? So it's probably not been in use, or they've gotten upgraded things or what have you. Now, I don't know for sure that that's the case for everything. There are very suspicious stories about this. I know the Postmaster General has now stopped all of that, but there has been various examples that would indicate that it wasn't just old equipment that was being removed. The only other thing I would also add to that, however, is that they have seen about a 60% increase in parcel deliveries over the last 2 years. And they've seen a decline in flat mail pieces, which are the envelopes. Mm. The other thing, and this is information I've heard through postal officials that I know and things like that, is that they've been trying to invest and increase their parcel capacity because they've seen such a dramatic increase in that volume, to the point where they're even trying to purchase larger postal vehicles that the mail carriers drive because they can't fit everything they need on their route with the parcels in one vehicle. So this has been an ongoing thing. And if they are trying to increase capacity and add parcel processing equipment, then that's an operational issue. But the key is that they've got to keep up with their service delivery on flats. So if they're going to make those sorts of adjustments, they've got to be able to offer the same service because this is a postal service, not a postal business.
Right. And just to clarify that, because that's a really important point, is that this is a service. It's the USPS. It's a service for the people that's in the Constitution.
Yes, there's a .gov.
So it's not intended to be, right. It's not intended to be a money-making operation. It's intended to serve the public. And, you know, I'm always very moved when I hear stories about people in Alaska, like islands off the coast, people who normally couldn't get access to FedEx or UPS, and that the Postal Service delivers to every American wherever they are. That's a really good point to bring up. And you're right. Like, we shouldn't be cutting up the things we need right now in order to help monetize it better with parcels. We can talk about that after the election, maybe.
You know, the one thing about the Postal Service that also makes them unique is they are the only entity, business, government, anything, that actually serves the entire American electorate and citizenry on a daily basis. They're the only entity that has that kind of infrastructure.
I love that.
And they are the only entity that is also serving every single election office, which there are over 10,000 of, and connecting those two things daily, right? So that's why it's so critical. And a lot of people forget that you think about that kind of infrastructure. That is a massive infrastructure that provides an extremely valuable public service, just like elections is a public service and needs to be free from partisan politics.
Oh, man, I love that. And I just would like to say, by the way, I can hear your kids a little bit in the background playing, and I love it so much. It's such a reminder that here is like this amazing, powerful, incredible woman who's devoting her days to like literally saving democracy while parenting.
Yeah, yes. Lots of chatter and laughing.
And that's what we do. I like it. I think it's great. Hey, that's like the new pandemic reality, right? So listen, Amber, sometimes our inclination is to scream about all this stuff on social media, something I'm very good at.
But yes.
What can we do about it that will be productive and hopefully impactful? Not just the post office, but just mail-in voting endorsements in general. Like, what can we do? What can we do to help talk about this?
After we scream, what can we do?
Well, I think first and foremost, if you're not registered to vote or you haven't checked your registration in a while, do that today, right? And encourage people to verify that they're registered at the correct address, all those things. Very important to do today. And then make a plan to vote. And if that plan includes voting by mail, sign up today and encourage your family and your friends and your networks, you know, do that, right? So check registration, make a plan to vote, including vote at home, and sign up for that right away. Some states are offering ballot tracking. So that was a system that we pioneered in Denver now 11 years ago. You can track your ballot just like you would a package. You can sign up also for that so that you know where your ballot is at every moment. And California just rolled out their system yesterday. So there's those sorts of things in states too. And then there's a great need for good people to work at the polling places and serve as poll workers and election judges. So if there's interest and people want to get involved that way, that's a really great public service. You get paid, of course, but it's also a good way to learn about the election process and serve the community. And then the final thing I would say, and this is a personal story to me, but, you know, as you heard, my kids are 7 and 9. I'm a single mom. And every election, my ballot comes, one of them comes in and says, "Mom, it's here. When are we going to start working on your ballot?" We sit down together every election. Aww. They read me the instructions. They read the candidates. They say things like, "Mom, what does the governor do? And what does the mayor do? Maybe I want to be mayor someday." And we have this whole discussion. It takes me days, literally, to fill out the ballot because we go through the judges and we go through the issues and all of it. However, it is so fun. They then go and we walk down to the park and drop it off in the secure drop box before election day. And I know that I have created lifelong civically minded future voters who understand what the choices that I'm making and what they will make on their ballot and how they impact their community and their world. So if you're a mom and you've got kids or, you know, bring in the young people, the future voters into the process with you this election cycle and every election cycle, because there's such an opportunity to do that.
I love that. So I'm verklempt. Well, Kristen, you know me. I cry about everything, but like, that's beautiful. And I'm someone who's brought my kids into the voting booth in person with me every single year.
Yes.
And so I get it. And this year, due to all sorts of circumstances, maybe I will have to bring them with me to the drop-off box.
Yeah, it's fun for them. I mean, and I really like that they see the ballot and they're reading it and they, you know, we talk about it. We go through and talk about that. We just never would be able to do that if it was in a booth.
That's such a good point. Thank you so much. This is so helpful. We know that there are going to be listeners who have lots of questions, who want to learn more about this, about you and all the work that you are doing. Folks can go to voteathome.org. And where are the best places for folks to find you on social media?
Sure. Well, my Twitter sign is at Amber McReynolds. I do share a lot on there about, you know, the voting process, things happening in various states. I also try to highlight women leaders and election officials that are doing great things. I'm unaffiliated, so, you know, I kind of avoid partisan politics stuff, but I just like to share a lot of info about elections. So follow me at Vote at Home is our organizational Twitter account, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook, and the organization is as well. And then I wrote a book earlier this year called When Women Vote. We rolled it out January 30th, and who would have known that the pandemic would hit and we wouldn't be able to kind of get around the country and share our story. But we wrote the book and it includes a roadmap and playbook for how to improve the voting process for all. And it actually includes vote by mail as part of it and expanding that. So that book, it's a quick read. We have a Twitter account, Facebook, and an Instagram. It's called When Women Vote, and it's available on Amazon and Kindle and all of that. It's a good, short, accessible read.
That's awesome. Well, and you know, so many families now are online learning. We know there are lots of families who are homeschooling. So it sounds to me that it would be a great civics lesson, social studies. I can think of so many ways to use that book, Liz. So
yeah,
that's my brain at work with that.
My brain only reads short things these days, so I like that.
I'll share one final thing about the book. My kids wrote the foreword.
That's awesome. We are big fans of kids' involvement in their parents' work, as you can tell. That's wonderful. Well, listen, you're going to stick around for our cool picks of the week, yes?
Yes.
Awesome. We will be right back with those right after this.
So, Liz, I am so excited to be introduced to our new sponsor, Perfect Clean. I had never heard of them before now, and now I'm kind of obsessed with this whole thing.
I am too. Okay, let me tell you, I have a thing about stuff in hotels, for real.
Yes.
Like, I always am, like, wondering, like, ooh, what do they use to get the sheets to smell good? Or, like, how do they clean the... I don't know why.
Yes.
I just have this, like, weird data nerd fascination about how they clean, like, big industrial spaces.
Yes.
And so,
now you know.
When I learned that Perfect Clean was the company that made that stuff, and now we can get it, I was actually kind of excited because, I don't know, I like cleaning these days. It's like my new pandemic fascination, cleaning things.
That is a really good fascination.
Some baked bread, I clean.
I love it. Well, I mean, that's a good fascination to have these days. But if you're like us and you are not yet familiar with Perfect Clean, they make mops, wipers, and cleaning kits for the bathroom, your kitchen, your kids' rooms, basically your whole house.
I'm looking at their website. I'm looking at these like cool, funky, like orange wipers and mitts and flat mops, and they're really cool looking. I like the orange too. I'm a sucker for good colors.
This is like peak adulting right now, by the way.
I know, it really is. I'm like, ooh, mops.
Ooh.
But I mean, I know all of us have been very sensitive to the great toilet paper and paper towel rush of 2020.
Yes.
And I'm so like, have you become the person who's like, here, please use this 1/8 of a quarter square of paper towel to wipe that up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is so great because you can save money and then you can cut back on all those disposable paper products. And this is so cool. You don't need to use any of those harmful chemicals or solutions to clean effectively. You actually just need water. That's so awesome.
I love that. I'm like seriously obsessed with like the rainbow website. I really like this and I didn't know they existed. And you know what I'm going to do right after this? I'm going to go buy some because that's what we do when we have cool sponsors. We end up giving them all the money back. So listen, if you want to check out Perfect Clean, which you should. I think it's really good. Also, Kristen, you know, there's COVID-19 going around. Did you know that?
I heard a rumor.
Yes, that's a thing. And since the CDC recommends disinfecting frequently touched items in the home, I'm just saying,
yes.
Perfect Clean, you can find that stuff right there. It's perfectclean.com to keep your home safe and clean, perfectclean.com. And here's what's even cooler for our listeners. If you use code COOL, COOL, you already know that, 25% off your order. How great is that? That's probably even
great.
Better than like the hospitals get.
Yes. Yes. So go to perfectclean.com, use the code COOL and save 25% off. All right. Well, now it's time for
Cool Picks of the Week. Cool Picks of the Week.
And Liz, Amber, I'm going to jump in with mine and then defer to you ladies.
Oh, wow, Kristen.
Yes, I'm going to go first today. Well, you're very excited.
You're bold.
I'm feeling very bold. I'm feeling empowered. I'm feeling like I want to send some mail. But that is not my cool pick. My cool pick is actually Teenage Bounty Hunters on Netflix. Have either of you seen this series yet?
No.
Oh my gosh. It is so fun. It's super campy. It's kind of like, I don't want to compare it to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but it has that feel to it. So it's about these twin girls who accidentally stumble upon becoming bounty hunters, and they live in a southern town. They're from a very religious Christian family, and they go to a very conservative school. It's just really clever. The writing is great. The acting is fun. I don't recognize anyone in the cast. It's kind of all these new
people. I'm scrolling through it on IMDb right now, and you had me at Kadeem Hardison.
Oh yes.
Oh my gosh, from a different world. I love him.
Yes. That is the one person I recognize in the cast. and he is amazing. So anyway, if you want something super campy, super fun, definitely some adult themed things. So I'm thinking teens and older. If you are thinking about watching it with your kids, it's definitely more adult themed, but it's very fun, distracting if you need a little break from the news cycle here and there. So Teenage Bounty Hunters on Netflix, highly recommend.
Very cool. Amber.
So here's my cool pick, and it's Women's Equality Day.
Yes.
So in celebration of that and to support the post office actually put out a 19th Amendment stamp. So it's Forever Stamps. They're available already for purchase. You can order them online and have them shipped to you, but you can get the 19th Amendment Women's Vote 100 special stamp, and they're forever stamps. So I think it'd be awesome for everybody to, you know, do that.
Yes.
I love that.
That's a great pick.
And that's another good reason for us to save the post office. So it really will be a forever stamp and not over in like 6 months.
Yes.
That's very cool. That's a great pick. Thank you. So my pick, let's go with alcohol this week, Kristen. Another break from the news. So my friends, Monica and Lisa, they run an amazing restaurant upstate called Homemade Hudson. It's at Homemade Hudson on Instagram. And they always share really cool finds. One of them that they introduced me to this summer is Nine Pin, the brand, makes something called Rosé Cider. Have you ever had that?
I've had it. It's
delicious.
You
have?
Yes.
Amber, have you had rosé cider?
I have not, but I want to.
It's so good.
You know, it sounded like something I wouldn't like. Like, it would be sweet and apple-y and girly. And I was, like, a little skeptical, although Lisa and Monica are very cool, and so I trust them completely. And it was fabulous. I drank it all summer, but my local liquor store did not have it. So it turns out Wolfers, which is a Long Island winery, they make their own, and it's called Number 139 Dry Rosé Cider. Anyway, it's fabulous. It's like summery, bubbly, but not too sweet. It's not as like rosé-ish as rosé. I don't know how to describe it. It's just really satisfying and light and good drinking. It's kind of like a good pre-dinner cocktail when you feel like starting a little early because it's summer. Anyway, I'm loving it. It's making me very happy. And you can get them in cans too. Very convenient for the new New York State, like a no law, liquor laws that we seem to be having these days.
That's awesome. And you know, as always, we will link up everything that we've spoken about, Amber's website and all our cool picks of the week and anything else we mentioned. We know we mentioned a lot of links on this show in particular, so head over to coolmompicks.com and check out our podcast page for more information. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Spawned. Huge thanks to our engineer, John Bowen, and our guest, Amber McReynolds. There are a few things that you can do to help us spread the word about Spawned. Please, please, please subscribe, download, or save our episodes. That is a big deal, actually. It seems really weird, but it actually helps more people find us when you download or save our episodes. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you like our show. And honestly, just tell your friends, your family members, your followers about our podcast. That really helps.
They trust you.
Yes.
You.
They trust you.
You listening right now, you are a trusted influencer. You are. And that's how those things work. And hey, don't forget about our brand new podcast, OutTech Your Kids. In 15 minutes or less, each week we are offering super helpful digital parenting tips, tricks, and advice. Once a week, 15 minutes, that's it. Click over, subscribe right now, as long as you're here on your podcast app. We really think you'll like it, especially if you like our tech episodes. And hey, thanks so much for listening to today's episode of Spawned. This is Liz.
And this is Kristen. Have a great day.
Bye. Don't forget to vote.